there, everyone. Welcome to the Q&A of Tales from Oxray Season 2. I'm Josh Long. I've got with me these wonderful people, a brother John, regular John, father John, son Chris, and Uncle Dave. Not my son. Father John's son.
Not your uncle.
Could be my uncle. No, that's right. He's like my brother. Cousin. There we go. That's what it is. But anyways, hopefully you've all... What
and whoever the other person
is. Whoever the other person is.
Oh, and Amber. Aunt Amber. Gosh.
It's all right. I'm forgettable. It's totally cool.
No. And Aunt Amber.
Inappropriate Aunt Amber.
That's right.
Inappropriate, excuse you.
And we're hopefully you've been watching or listening to us play season 2 of Tales from Oxford, where we played Godbound. And today is this all about answering those burning hot questions from listeners, myself, and the players. And let's just get into it. First question for the players. If you could hang out for a day with an NPC from season 2, who would it be and what would you do?
Gambo.
Gambo was still there, wasn't he? Yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What would you do with Gambo, Amber?
We would go shopping and then go to see a movie. Or play, you know, whatever's in Moxbury. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then at some point, is this Amber? Is this Amber or is this Milana?
That was a great question. I'm not sure. Take either way.
I think he would get annoying after a while, but it'd be pretty fun.
I think you could handle him for like an afternoon and it'd be fine.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah. He's like a guy that I could hang out for like a couple hours or so and then
go wig shopping.
Yeah, definitely. Costume shopping.
He's one of those friends that you have like a set deadline for, like, okay, yeah, I'm free at noon, but I have a thing, a really important thing at 4 p.m. So
we did wrap up at 3 o'clock and he'll just keep trying to like prolong it. And then eventually I just leave.
Yep.
I'm so sorry. I have to go get ready. When I don't have to get ready, I just sit in my room staring.
Compress from your Gambo afternoon.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. What about you, Chris or Azriel?
I think if it's me as a person, it would probably be Tulio because he's the least likely to murder me.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Offhand.
Mm-hmm.
If it's Azriel, I think it's probably the whisper secret demigod lady whose name escapes
Polyphony?
Me at the moment.
Polyphony?
Yeah, Polyphony.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh god!
I guess that's a good point to point out. We have not.
That's like a weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's like a. Yeah, that's
you
a
guys
long,
are going to a, like fantasy Cancun together.
That's a 3-day weekend.
Yeah, like. Mm-hmm.
Where Monday's a bank
clothing
holiday,
optional resort kind of thing. Mm-hmm.
Excellent. Correct. What about you, Dave / Newek?
Well, I mean, the obvious answer is for Newek is Best of Us. I mean,
God. Yes.
Fucking Best of Us.
Yeah, you guys never killed him.
Nope.
Because I really didn't want you to. I love that. I mean, although, you know, I mean, Kage and Shaden are crazy.
Mm-hmm.
As Dave, I guess I would go with Body Matt. And we would just have a really nice house party to invite some people I don't like.
Yes, absolutely. What about you, Brother John and / Brimstone?
I think naturally. Well, I think it's funny that I was the one who kind of fought for Gambo being back into the series in the beginning. So
but yeah,
I took that one. So I guess I'd be interested in the weird jazzercise ghost man, because that was so such a bizarre thing.
Solitus.
Like, hey, we're going to you know, go into the spirit realm and just dance our asses off. Like, what is this that is fascinating on so many levels that it's just like, I gotta know what this guy's all about. But of course, you know, we didn't have the chance to like properly hang out. It's like, oh, we're here for a mission and whatnot. So.
Excellent.
What did I
and of course then we ended up destroying a lot of stuff, so you know,
like I could have chose a ghost man to hang out with, and instead I was like, yes, this lizard boy and his wig. It just goes to show I'm not very good
a theater wizard.
The theater wizard,
a theater lizard.
Yeah, that's like the first that's a memorable character to me, so I'm like, yeah, I'd be down to figure out what that person's all about, because they're throwing a wild party and Asriel is enjoying themselves, and if Asriel is enjoying themselves, then, you know, can't be all that bad.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know if Asriel is a real good litmus test, but you do you.
And what about you, Father John?
I think I would be hanging out with Matthias Cromwell and his family.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Spaghetti dinners.
Mm-hmm. Yes, lots of spaghetti dinners. I don't know whether Sally and little Matthias and Sophia, I don't know whether they're even real at this point, but it seems like a good place to hang out.
That is a great question.
And is that for both of you?
Well, that's where I would rather hang out. I'm sure
you and the split personality that lives with inside you.
Right, right. I think Gerlach would probably hang out with Zanye, but
yeah, that's
right. Whether a god counts as an NPC. Mm,
yeah,
I see. Okay, that was the question.
I didn't really play her, but it's good enough. Gerlach definitely seems like the type that just kind of very focused.
I do like John's answer because the very normal family that you could potentially just like have a board game night with or something. Mm-hmm.
Have really good
yeah food. sure
and mm-hmm. The dad is really cool until you go into the bathroom and realize it's covered in blood.
I come down and see my basement. I got some great tool.
I got some miniatures down here. Mm-hmm. That you should check out.
Oh man.
And of course I think that actual Brimstone would hang out with Chitella. I mean,
maybe, probably.
I mean
he probably would, but at the same time he's too all over the place. I think Brimstone really is really attached to Jem. Mm-hmm. Tella, but yeah, like he's too weird to like stay around one place for too long.
Mm-hmm.
We were with that child bad. Just long enough to traumatize her
and then
now we're like deuces.
We really didn't prepare her for anything.
Yeah.
Nope.
No,
she has no valuable life skills. She doesn't have to eat. So,
I mean, but she does like.
We're like, we'll be back for bath time, and then we went to hell.
Yeah.
Here's a bunch of eggs. Have a good time. We'll be back, and then never came.
She's fun in the, we know that she's very destructive and dangerous, but also very impressionable and will do anything we pretty much get her to do. We had her dress up as a transformer for a party.
Yes.
You had her dress up as a wait, you brought her to an adult party, so I don't know.
You know, just because I adopted the child doesn't mean
we're serious kid
family of weirdos.
Who was Josh's favorite NPC to mm-hmm. play? Who was the most difficult? Why? My most favorite is Polyphony. Because I get to flirt with all of you.
Yeah.
And just seeing the reactions and stuff. And she's just like gossipy and she is like a friend of me. And there's just like so much space there. And I love it.
Why does this not surprise me?
Why?
Every
Monster
like...
Hearts played a Queen Bee. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Who was the most difficult? For me, was Shalizard. And the reason was I feel like I really dropped the ball on really presenting him as like, you know, that bad figure,
a threat.
Yeah, bad figure to Brimstone and all that kind of stuff. There's like, I felt like I just dropped the ball on a whole bunch of stuff with Shalizard.
Well, I did like mind wipe him within the first two sessions, and
he was pretty much crippled the whole season.
Yeah. I was gonna say we did kind of neuter the shit out of him.
Yeah, but still, I feel
he basically became within the first couple of episodes a hobo wizard because he's just hiding out in the red light.
I think it's the same thing, Josh, what I feel when I GM, where it's like I can't really do truly dark and insidious kind of characters mm-hmm. because I personally just skew so goofy
mm-hmm.
that I think it's hard to do, and especially with this group of people,
mm-hmm.
I think it's hard to do truly. I don't know, insidious character.
Right. Being the character that says, oh, I'm going to like drive this point into you with a dagger, like not physically, but, you know, emotionally or whatever. And I'm like, this,
well, wait a minute. You know. I think this party has plenty of that already.
But I guess more.
Don't step on my shtick is what I'm saying.
Yeah. On purpose with emotionally. But yeah, Shalizar was definitely the hardest for me. Polyphony, I love playing. Glad you didn't kill her, even though there was a point. Seemed like you might have killed her, but you didn't. Next one. What was the most memorable moment from season 2?
Was this for all of us?
All of us, yeah.
It feels like a long time since we played season 2.
Mm-hmm.
I think the most memorable moment is when we got those two Demons Married.
Yeah, that was really good.
It was like really good. It was the funniest moment, but also just like we solved a weird issue in a very strange way, and it was just like everything was cool. Mm-hmm. And it was just like it was just fun, I guess, in a way. And I just remember that, and it is such a bizarre thing to just have them married, like be like, oh yeah, we solved your relationship mm-hmm. stuff, and now you're married, and we're all cool now.
That was good too, and I liked being the gossiping ice devils as well. Mm-hmm. Like whenever, anytime that we, mm-hmm. for me, anytime that I get to jump out of my PC and into an NPC is always a fun time for me. And so I like to think I like the one when we were in some sort of council meeting. I can't remember what it was exactly.
Was it the vampire one? Oh no, the council, the Brilliant Trillion. You mean
the Brilliant Trillion? Yeah. And we gotta be different NPCs and say stuff. And then also when it was like coming to Newek with problems in Monster Town, and I gotta go on about
that was really good scene.
That was really fun.
Okay, thing, Father John.
I think the being trapped inside of a giant mimic mm-hmm. while my followers are being slowly force-fed to death was particularly memorable. Yeah.
That's what I was thinking of too. I was trying to think of something that stuck with me more, and like there's a lot of stuff I remember now that I'm thinking about it, but like the realization that we're inside a giant mimic, yeah, that's pretty good.
Yeah, I were also like I think another memorable thing for me too was I think when we realized Gerlach was like also Matthias Cromwell, that was really fun.
Yeah, that was
because like watching John's face and like the Gerlach of distress was pretty great.
Yeah, it was really good for me. The mimic came first to mind, but also the vampire council was good as well, because you put me on the spot with being the child vampire and stuff, and it was just ridiculous.
Yelled at him.
Yeah. Kind of dovetailing in, it was like, what was your favorite encounter scenario? So more of like challenge, like, okay, this is, and maybe the mimic, maybe it's probably applicable for this one. Like here is the situation. What was your most favorite like situation that you had to kind of like solve? Yes, oh, Dave. Boy.
I mean, kind of similar, I guess, was that whole thing where it was the race against the clock to get Gentella away from being a warhead. I thought that was a really cool structure to that encounter. Mm. And like, I'm not a very big mechanics person, but I liked the way that ran, and that kind of that extra push that kept us from horsing around all the time was absolutely a memorable thing for me. Mm-hmm.
I totally forgot that I timed you all. Yeah. Oh man. Anyone else have a favorite kind of encounter that you wanted to you had to overcome?
I don't know. I mean, the whole ghost party was pretty fun. I think that was a whole situation where we had Gerlach had a wand gun. I can't remember what was going on. And like we were all going to die that night. I don't remember exactly.
Everyone left their body at one point. Yeah.
Yeah. And then trying to figure out what to do. So, you know, what's so sad is I think my brain is starting to melt into season one a bit. And there's no bar. I'm not going to, but whatever.
You got anything, Brother John or Father John?
Try to remember when Brimstone decided to become a law firm out of the blue.
I think that was
primarily when we were going to save Grilax.
Yes.
Yeah, that was pretty late in the season.
But, oh. Mm-hmm. Cat mission where we dressed up as like Ghostbusters and whatever, and we were dressed up in jumpsuits. Mm-hmm. And we're animal control, we're here to help you with your cat stuff. And then
we were short-handed,
so we just did like a one-off thing.
Were like doing some sleuthing, and I thought that was kind of fun doing some sleuthing.
I forgot about that. Yeah,
forgot about the cat mission too, because I think was Milana talking to cats? I can't remember who was talking to cats. Anyway, it doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
But just generally, my favorite scenarios and the ways we solve them are usually when we go in poorly disguised as things, where it's like, why are we even going in disguise?
And then yell at an old woman.
I love unnecessary disguising. Like, I just love it. I like to do that. It's fun and to me. And then just pretending to be whatever. And I don't know. And we just found out, like, dog cat shit and whatever.
That's right.
of course he weaved in some important plot point to it, but otherwise, you know, I just thought that was fun. And that poor old lady was just like, my cats, they keep leaving me.
Yeah. We also discovered what a cat organ was in real life. And that will be with me until the end of my life.
Yeah. The soiree or whatever.
I like the scene where we ganked the demigod. And then I had to be convinced to let him come back to life.
Was that the lizard voice that you did?
The what?
Oh, that was with Josh the silly. Was it the
Ultio? Ultio, you killed Ultio, and then
the time control guy.
Yeah,
showed up.
Oh, I don't have his name. Oops,
name.
It was another Urla.
Urla.
Honestly, the one we, for whatever reason, I just call him the Moon Man. Because like you're like you see the moon and then everything's time, whatever, and it's like, oh, the Moon Man.
The Moon Man.
That's what I call him, at least in my mind.
Mm-hmm. You got anything, Chris?
Yeah. I really liked this. I think this was part of the Gemtella being a bomb encounter. But where we're chasing the people across the city and like all these random like halflings and evil, or not even evil, but just like, are like coming out of the woodwork, and we're like, get the fuck out of my way!
Yeah.
I got shit to do today. And then I did like in that same encounter, I think I killed a bunch of halflings.
You got to sever the line, yeah.
Yeah. Well, that was pretty nice.
Oh, gosh.
That was. Whew.
Yeah. I'm just going to go down through the noble families at some point. And keep severing.
Oh, man. Next question. Can you finally shed some light on the Spaghetti Men? Why are they so powerful? Is the spaghetti their natural form? Are they shapeshifters? So the Spaghetti Men are based on Psycho.
The anime.
Parasite.
When Josh says they are based on blah, 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 we don't need to hear the anime because we know it's the anime.
Yeah.
Like whatever Josh bases, it's anime.
Not everything, but yeah, so they're based on that because in that anime, there's aliens that come to Earth and infect people and take over their bodies, and they can break apart in all this disgusting, pretty much what you were seeing in this in the season. And I really like that, but they were not aliens. I instead had Shalzard making them because it kind of ties in a little bit to season one of the blood magic and all that kind of stuff in hell. And so I was like, all right, you know, X years had passed. So Shalazar, you know, picked up on it and was able to make these weapons pretty much. And they he was able to control them. But then when you make him forget how, what the fuck he's doing, you can't. That's when they became standalone.
You're welcome, everybody.
Yeah. And that's when they became standalone, which was really interesting to start. Then it actually went really heavy into the anime because that's the whole thing in the anime is what happens when these superpower things are standalone and they start grouping together because of certain reasons and all that kind of stuff. And so we got to play out the anime way more than I was expecting, which was interesting.
Didn't I take Shalazar's memory away literally the first session?
It's the first or second session, yeah. I think it was the first session. Yes, it was the first session.
Wow.
Yeah, fucked me over first session.
And set the tone for the rest of the campaign.
Yeah. And so why were they so powerful? So in the Godbound book, there is an equation of how to determine like a worthy foe and all that kind of stuff. And I think I used it by the books, that equation. And that's what I came up with. And I never changed it since. I may have been off by like by one factor, but I think I did exactly right. But I don't know. Who knows? It was like the first time I was making up a thing per this equation. And so, yeah, they're pretty straight damage is really powerful, and when they get six attacks, it's a real you know, at plus 15 or 20 to hit, it's real bad. And so I was just going off that equation, and so when you get two of them, it gets real bad. And so since they were so powerful, I never changed their stats because I was like, there are ways of defeating this clearly, but at that time when I created the character, I didn't have anything in mind. But I was like, there has to be ways of doing so, or why would they make numbers this big? And so that's where they are. So that's how they kind of came to be mechanically. And they're so they're not as this thing about shapeshifters. They're not shapeshifters. They're just organisms that have a humanoid form, you know, if they're fully grown. And then because Shalazar was using them to infiltrate a whole bunch of the Moxery, being like, all right, I'm making this humanoid that, you know, looks like the part of Brilliant Trillion or whatever. And then they make their ways into different parts of Moxery and do his bidding before they became standalone. So they do not change their shape from a humanoid presentation. They only split apart like the anime into a disgusting spaghetti weapon thing. And that's that.
I thought it was interesting that, like, you know, we fight a spaghetti man and like thrashes us. Mm-hmm. And then we fight Shalazar. It's like zoop, 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 dead.
Mechanics. More like not mechanics, but more like fiction. At that point, you're like, okay, I want these two pieces of fiction to interact with each other. And it's just like, well, this is probably how it would work. So it's interesting.
It was more solving a problem than brute forcing through that conflict.
Right. Next question. The Gemtel arc felt really unresolved. What were there plans to do more with them? So yeah, they're definitely unresolved. Answer this other question that's right after it. Gemtella, this is all in caps. Gemtella, who are they? So Gemtel's arc is definitely unresolved. They, how they came to be initially was you guys were all going through the mountain, your old mountain part of the dungeon. You came to that big rock with something inside of it. And this was a spur of the moment creation of Gemtella. I was like, something has to be inside that rock. And I was thinking back to season one. And I was like, inside that rock should be the Crystal of Kaze or something akin to it. Right. And I was like, that's still too boring. And then I was just like, someone's spirit's inside this thing. And that's how Gemtella came to be. And so over the season, I've actually thought about them. And I have some ideas about how to explore their, you know, their origin. Because I have some ideas about that. And I'm not going to say what they are. So their arc's totally not over with. I have some ideas how to, for us to all learn about the origin story and, you know, kind of flesh that out. And then, you know, going forward, it's like, yeah, it's like, I think it's just really interesting that there's this child figure that's like a nuclear bomb and what do you do with them? And I think this is a really good NPC for role playing with.
And it's also very anime.
I suppose so. Yeah.
If you think about things like Metropolis and any sort of character that is a humanoid who is also a powerful weapon, like I think of things like Outlaw Star or stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Or even in Gurren Lagann.
Yep. And so that's Gemtella. I really am looking forward to the opportunity to look into her backstory because it'll push me for some storytelling stuff I want to do. Next one. Why do you hate the beautiful restaurants that we create in game? Donkey Meat Soup Kitchen, Tony's Bowls, now Mama Gumba's.
Yeah, why do you hate stuff?
This is one of those things that's true to life. It's really hard to run a small business restaurant like that. And so they constantly fail.
Nailed it. Chris figured it out right
away. Well, they're all doing fine until Josh, like, Hand of God comes along and, like, squishes them.
Well, isn't that the kind of way it is in the real world, too? You know, suddenly you have a flood, suddenly you have a pandemic, yes. Suddenly the portals to hell open up and drop your entire business on another plane of existence.
It's just because we happen to be there. We're the cursed figures, you know.
That's totally it. Yeah.
We should next time make a restaurant that we absolutely hate.
We never go to.
We don't like. It's
called Flop. I mean, yeah.
Have you eaten that
Flop? No, it's got to be like a really nice place, like where people are like, you know, it'd be great if we went there, but like we'll never go there because we know if we go there it'll catch on fire.
And then one day we get coupons to go in for a free meal, and then that's when another portal will open.
Hey guys, I got a Groupon, it's 20% off.
It'll be really hard to interview a manager for that restaurant. It's like, so do you have any experience operating restaurants in hell?
Yeah.
You your delivery business if you had to operate from another plane of existence.
I really crave Mama Gumba's, but it's no longer available on DoorDash. Why?
The delivery fuser is just insane because you have to get a planar spell off or a planar bean. So, you know,
plane shift in order to get your soup.
I want them shrimps.
But why we hate it? Yeah, the Donkey Meat Soup Kitchen. It's still going, right? Yeah, That and Tony's Bowls is still going.
Okay, so really the goal.
There's no way Tony Bowles is still going. There's no way.
At the beginning of season two, he was still established. Season two, I mean, beginning. Yeah, was it? No, it was in. It was in Evil as Evil Does. Yeah, never mind. Hopefully he's still around. I don't know. You just never asked.
But like, because I think he was gone because I think there was a big cooking competition mm-hmm. that Tony was going to.
Yeah.
And something went wrong, and I don't think Tony made it. I might be wrong. Oh, it's Beach again.
Cooking competition, and I don't think Tony made it. I love that. This is like, wow.
What happened to this? Yeah.
That's how I run my games. As for Mama Gumbas, so I was originally planning on doing it in Mama Gumbas, but during that session, they're like, you guys are like, I don't know what to do. What should we do? Blah, blah, blah. And I was like, fine. Shalzar rolls in, MFers. And so then that's what happened. Through your indecisions, I just pushed forward, and it was in Mama Gumbas.
You know, thinking back what Dave said, I'm sorry, I'm kind of derailing. Just like imagining the headlines from Moxbury. Today at the cooking competition, there were no survivors. It's just like, okay.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
What a world Moxbury is.
Demons were summoned.
That's a hell of a cooking portals competition, open. Really.
Today at the Arts and Crafts Festival, the Arts District of Moxbury, the homunculus got loose. It's like, what?
I would love to see fantasy news headlines.
The entire Arts and Crafts Fair was destroyed before the blue ribbon could be given out.
I didn't win!
And there would just be like a tattered, like, burned blue ribbon, mm-hmm, like, mm-hmm, laying in a pile of rubble, and that would be, like, the lead photo.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The pie-eating contest involves necromancy. It's very weird.
All right, next question. What's up with that super powerful moon Time Lord asshole? Is he going to come back to bite us in the ass? Yes, is the answer. Next question.
What is up with him, though?
I can't say.
Yeah.
Yeah, if he's going to bite us in the ass, I guess he can't share.
I can't.
Don't worry. Milana's got this.
Oh, yeah. Especially Milana's got this. Out of everyone, Milana's got this. In all the wrong ways.
I'll bite him in the ass.
No, yeah, he was a very interesting character that I had him, you know, pair up with some other NPCs. And him and the other stuff he was alluding to, I felt was a really good setup for after the season. So I was just like, here's some stuff I'm going to start, you know, introduce these people, make you think about a few things, because you guys did ask some good questions during that time. And be like, all right, here's this thing. And I can pick up on it next time, you know, next season kind of deal. But yeah, they are very interesting, and I can't wait for y'all to hate them so much.
Great, wonderful.
Next question: is there anything you wish you could have done that you didn't for season two?
I can tell you that I wish I could have killed a bunch of holy rollers. I spent an awful lot of time around Paylor supporters without any of them dying.
Yeah.
That's right. Mm-hmm. I forgot about
alignment
this.
Check.
I forgot about this as far as most memorable moment for season two. That kind of ties into what I didn't for season two. I wish I made my child cult more powerful. And also the memorable part.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
Is when I realized I had a 22-year-old old orphan who came for candy.
I think it was Todd. Once an orphan, you never
I didn't really
unless you get adopted, I suppose.
I really didn't spend a lot of time building up like cult stuff, like a following. Mm-hmm. I kind of wish I'd done more of that.
Yeah, there's totally mechanics and everything for that kind of stuff, but yeah, I didn't get to it.
Quick derailing question, because kind of we like, when was the Orphan Guild stuff established? That was before the time skip, wasn't it?
Yes. Yeah.
So like, yeah, I imagine there's still old orphans. There
of
you go.
Course.
Yeah,
that's,
mm-hmm. 50 year old orphans.
Todd was.
Well, and then you get into the hinky question of like, okay, what about an elf orphan? Mm-hmm. Like, how long does an elf stay a child? Till they're like 60 or something ridiculous, I bet. Mm-hmm. So like, I don't know. There's stuff like that. And
then you have the orc orphans who are, you know, fully grown at 2 weeks or whatever. Or that's the Uruk-hai. Orphans.
Yeah. And then like, I don't know. I would totally play an orphan campaign where we're all various. Yeah. And I call dibs on being a baby dragon. Like I'm talking, ooh. I'm talking like a wormling who's like mm-hmm. a house cat sized. Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Yes.
Okay, Josh, you heard it.
I know. I got it in my memory banks.
Wolfing campaign.
That's like a mini campaign right there.
Yep.
Can I play Bucket?
Bucket's an orphan now. Bucket's an orphan now. He killed his mother, and yeah. his father is negligent. So,
mm-hmm.
Just kidding. I love Bucket dearly, and he may be the only NPC that Azrael tries to treat right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Tries.
Especially, I'm gonna be honest with you, especially after I saw the giant house or building sized mimic, I'm like, ooh, potential.
Wow.
Grow up, little Bucket.
Could you imagine
you could be, Bucket?
Could you imagine a house that you could live in, but it'll also kill your enemies for you?
Every time we kill something cool,
yes.
you can headcanon that Azrael is scooping up a little bit of viscera and feeding it to Bucket.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
A little bit of demigod here, a little bit of archdevil.
I mean,
there.
It's a and then it's a little more, and a little more, and a little more.
And then he's like, "Feed me, Azrael."
Okay.
Yeah. Bucket's gonna get him num nums.
That was a deep reach there, Josh. I'm very impressed.
I'm glad someone got it.
Feed me. Feed
this yeah, people. I am shocked that Josh understands that reference, but I'm happy.
Feed me all night long.
It's one of the 10 movies that Josh has seen.
Exactly. When I was a child.
And it is one of my favorites, I should point out.
Pretty good.
Yeah. Anyone else have something that you wish you could have done in season 2?
Oh, I would have loved to have a heist with Kage.
Ooh.
Like, Nuuk and Kage go, like, steal a thing. Oh, mm-hmm. God.
Mm-hmm.
That would have been nice.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like, I mean, yeah, I pretty much did everything I wanted. I set up a cult. I mean, yeah, I wish I would have made them bigger and stronger, but you know, there's still time, I mm-hmm. imagine.
Sometimes I want to see things happen just to see what happens, and so part of me was like, I wonder what would have happened if Gemtel just blew up. that one time when that was going on, and she's
but it
like
would
if,
have been,
if we just let it happen, with mm-hmm. the, what that would have been like. And it's not so much as what I wanted to do in season 2, but it's kind of like I wonder how that would have changed the course of the game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I feel like that was like an important fork in the road right there. Like if something did happen or didn't happen, and I'm kind of curious.
About yeah, it would have changed. It would have changed the whole city. Yeah.
Yep.
I would call it less of a regret or like, you know, or something that I wish I did, more like I'm curious about what would have happened.
Yeah.
Like that's as close as I get to like something I wish I would have done differently. Or
so, whatever. Yeah, like if you wouldn't have stopped them, that was the last tick for the Underhills in their front. And so mm-hmm. they would have had reliable nuclear weapons, you could put it that way. And they would have been one step away from another front they were working on as well that would have been devastating for almost all of Mox Ferry.
Ooh. That sounds nice.
Yeah.
Sounds
fun.
It wouldn't have destroyed Gemtella. They would have been able to reuse her.
They would have been, they would have been able to reuse her, but I don't know mechanic. Like I didn't play it out enough. I don't know if the soul would have been dead or not, but they would have been able to reliably.
Oh, she has, a soul.
Yeah. You already know.
No, I know. We know that. It's just thinking about that. It's
I'm imagining it like in the Justice League movie, the horrible Justice League movie where it's like, Gemtella makes a post-apocalyptic Mox Furry. And then we're all like, post-apocalyptic Batman and Flash.
Just like, yeah, I was gonna say, is this Nightmare Batman?
Like it would have been amazing, Josh, if you had squeezed in that, like, oh, Azrael from the future is showing before you, and you have to stop the events from happening.
Oh, wow.
Post-apocalyptic
Azrael with a trench coat and a shotgun.
Yeah, and I would like to think of that. If that ever comes to play, we should call it post-apox fairy.
Sometimes, winning a game isn't about dealing the most damage. or drawing the most cards, or making any measurable contribution towards victory. But hey, just because you don't have the stats doesn't mean you're not a f***ing gamer god, alright? Enter The Intangibles, a podcast on the Geekspective Network, where me, Kenny, and my brother Matt break down all the things that are hard to quantify in games. All kinds of games. We're talking classics like Sonic's the Hedgehogs, and chess, and 3D Pinball Space Cadet. Great game, by the way. We're talking new releases like
insert latest trending games on Twitch here.
Single player, co-op, competitive, card games, board games, role-playing games, play-by-mail games, the wakes. We do deep dives into our favorite games, digging into the intangibles that make them great and the intangibles that will make you a better player, and hey, maybe even a better person. Check out The Intangibles on whatever the heck platform you're listening to right now.
All right, next question, I believe. What was something you, Josh, planned for, and then we did the absolute opposite? So the one that came to mind right away was this, that final thing in hell. Pretty much, I set it up. You could, in the long run, either talk to, I forget the name, Bale or whatever the second level of hell ruler is, and you could have played, worked with one of the sides to defeat the other side kind of deal. And there's some stuff set up for, that's why I was like, oh, this will be like a 2-session thing. And then you didn't engage any of that stuff. And thus it became a 1-session thing, which was fine. But yeah, I was just like, okay, well, so that was the major thing. A lot of other stuff that I can remember is just more of like a lot of just presenting scenarios. So I guess, and y'all just doing whatever. And yeah, I guess for that last scenario, I was just like, here's these two sides. Let's not engage with either one, which is fine. But that was the biggest one, I think.
Here's the God's honest truth, Josh. And whenever we are presented with the scenario, I try and do the exact opposite of what I think you want us to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's why most of the time it's like, here's the situation. But yeah, they're right. That one I was hoping for one of two things. You're right. So I shouldn't have had hoped.
Josh, you should have been like, nothing's going on. Everything's calm. There's no fighting.
No infighting. Some stuff.
If you don't mind refreshing my memory, I know we ended the campaign by jumping into the giant vortex portal.
Yep.
And running out of somebody's like golden fortress thingy.
Yeah, the City of Brass. Yep.
Did we do anything to resolve the fighting between the two factions?
You did. So by killing Shalazard, they were using his body in hell.
Oh yeah, he was the mask spores.
Yeah, the stuff. Mask spores, and so it empowered all of Bale's, you know, soldiers that had taken the mask, and so they were able to fight off whatever his name.
Despater? Despater?
Yeah, Despater's army and all that kind of stuff. And so when you killed Shalazard, all the masks went, you know, crazy, and when over half your army all of a sudden is uncontrollable in any fashion, even for themselves, the other army can easily win. And so Despater definitely won.
Essentially, we just blew up the Death Star without knowing we were fighting on the other side.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, at least for me, I never saw that scenario as we should play one side against the other. It was just like, I don't know, or how do we get out of here?
I think it was the get the hell out of hell.
But, I mean, right? And Josh, you had also mentioned like mind wiping Shalazard was not something you had planned for.
Mm-mm. Yeah. That's fine.
Like, and like those one guys I remember we encountered that were Bell's people, like they were like, hey, you want to be fitted for masks? And that was pretty much it. And that guy was like following us like the Terminator. Like
Andrew.
Hey.
Just like, I need your measurements.
And well, and the whole mask removal process, it just goes in my idea that eventually Gerlach's going to end up becoming true neutral by the time this is all over.
Mm-hmm.
He's just slowly doing accidentally good things without meaning to.
Mm-hmm.
Because, yeah, the evil thing is to put masks on and Gerlach's going. I mean, like if you were a paladin who was able to travel to hell and cure these people of their curse, like it's pretty good stuff.
Mm-hmm. Objectively, a good act, even if you did it in barbaric and horrific ways.
Yep, I could definitely see a paladin be like, "This is the only way I know." As he,
oh, you've got this growth inside you. Let me cut you open. I'll just splay you out and pull it out, and then we'll throw it to the side, and I'll stitch you back up. And
that's right,
oh, that's surgery.
But yeah, he did have that. He did have that healing power. So,
mm-hmm.
Yep, accidental good.
Next question. Would it have been better to have a pantheon for the evildoers instead of everyone doing their own thing? And I don't know if you want to expand on this at all, Brother John.
Basically, the idea was that instead of saying we all had like our own separate bases and whatever, like having our sort of sects kind of like work in unison in a single location, as opposed to like, okay, I'm going to go off to go talk to my group or whatever, and then just sort of not really like all of us take control of each other's groups, but so much as we kind of give them a direction, but our sects just have deities they favor over others, much like a pantheon of gods. Like I used the Greek gods as example, where everyone knows the gods of Olympus, but they have ones that they particularly favor for whatever reason, like because of their interests or whatever. And do you think that would have helped mainstream interacting with our cults respectively? I suppose
I actually really like that idea. I really liked having a cult and like doing all that, but I didn't super enjoy how disconnected it felt from everybody else, and how like anytime we really wanted to do anything with the cult, it was like you're basically like splitting the party every time.
Right.
I kind of like the idea that we would be like a pantheon of like evil gods, basically. Mm-hmm. Maybe Azrael would pretend to be the good one or something like that. I don't know. But like
he would be the good cop.
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, like Azrael would be the god of false prophets and like no, lies. Yeah. I mean, that's a very evil way to skin that.
Yeah. Well, and you could even think of it in the sense that you know, gods are what they are, and you have to find a way to want to worship a god for some reason, even if they're completely callous assholes. And so, you know, yeah, you may hate everything about the way that god acts in mythology, but you know, when it comes to worship, to finding, you know, in Azrael's case, fertility or whatever the case may be, you know, when you need revenge, you know, you got to turn to that god whose pantheon it is, whose dominion it is, even though the rest of their story is pretty horrific.
That's a cool idea. Be like, I want to have babies, and the only guy who's in charge of that is this evil, like, apostate guy. Okay, here's a goat, buddy. Help me out.
I want to learn magic. Who do I have to go to? Oh, that undead sprite thing over there.
Yeah. And I felt like with all of our words and combined words, we're essentially like a very spiteful type of pantheon of deities. Excuse me. We're a very spiteful pantheon of deities. So it's like, I can imagine like a certain demographic, like, flocking to that general concept, and if they're looking for one specific type of way of dealing with it, then they have like these individual deities who specialize in certain things. You want someone dead, Gerlach. You want somebody to just get their just desserts, Brimstone. You want something to do with dead people, secrets, Milana. You want like your enemy's bloodline to die, Azrael. And you know, then you want just
you want an entire couple of cities turned into salt and all the people to die.
Yeah. So you'd be like, oh, I'm going to the evildoers.
I think sorted. I don't know. This is slightly related, but I want to say, first off, I really do like this idea. 100% wish we had done that. Mm-hmm. Perhaps if we play again, when we play again, that would be good. I was thinking about the fertility thing and like how many people like would want that, and then I was thinking about it like, why doesn't Azrael cause the problem and then sell the solution?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, like infertility plague in the water supply.
Yeah.
Here I got the solution here, and this sign up for, you know, clear the bridge.
Yeah, maybe it's not even like
step right up.
Just to be clear, we're talking about like
magic elixir.
Well, I've been playing Mass Effect recently, and they have a race there that they were basically, they got too uppity, and then the other aliens took away their reproductive ability, basically, so they would slowly die out. And I'm thinking about that, and I'm thinking about, like, how well that would work. Like,
Is that the race that look like big frogs?
Yeah, they're the Krogan.
Krogan. Well, also, there's a good movie called Child of Man, I think is what it's called.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That one's really good too.
Well, not to put too fine of a point on it, but you could come up with a concept like, oh, an original sin that everybody is born with, and the only way to get out of that is to, you know, follow this particular path.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you establish the problem, and then you're the only source of solution for the problem. Kind of monopolizes things.
And just like having the idea of an evil pantheon too, and this is kind of going into the weird political idea of it. Like, and I've been watching The Boys and some other stuff too, and a lot of other dark superhero ideas.
Sure, yeah.
Where it's just like, but like in general, I was thinking about one day if I wanted to run a God-bound campaign, I would probably put up situations where other gods would ask you for favors to do something to save face for them.
Mm. Yeah.
Be like, you know, I want you, God of Fertility, to make this family infertile and they'll come back to me. You know, that kind of idea. And just doing some really dirty behind the scenes stuff as far as like gods go. And then just presenting those options. Well,
and every mythology and pantheon is all about the gods being assholes.
Oh, yeah.
Oh my God. Yeah, I'm reading a webtoon right now called Lore Olympus that's really good about that kind of the Greek pantheon of gods and all that. It's real good.
It's like, you know, okay, random human, here's three beautiful goddesses. Which one do you think is the most beautiful? Well, that's a terrible question you have to answer. All these vengeful goddesses, and you have to pick which one you think is the most beautiful. I'll just gouge my eyes out, I think, rather than answer that question.
I can't see. Uh-huh. Then they make your eyes regrow.
So or something, yeah. And they take your eyelids away so you can never close your eyes. Wow. And then you get sent back out in the world.
Gods are... Oof.
Gods are just, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of gods.
Hilarious.
No, I'm just saying. I mean, that's kind of what mythology is all about. I mean, there's story after story of the horrible things that happen to you when you happen to run into the gods.
Mm-hmm. And man, gods are also super just incestuous. Mm-hmm. Not just like, but just like in the sense of like, not only just in the sexual way, but also in the like, weird friend, nasty. Oh God, it's all backstabby and spiteful and
yeah. If awful. You look at the number of things that Zeus got into and you know made pregnant, it's you know.
Yeah. Well, when you're a high, you know, like a cosmically powered elite, you know, your mindset tends to be and your morals tend to be a little not moral, messed up.
They're above human in, ability to understand.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like I thought that was the thing, boys. Especially about Greek gods, is that they are implicitly human. Like, they have human emotions, and they just have unbelievable power. So
and,
it's like,
and urges. They have unbelievable urges.
Well, and they don't like, have to deal with the repercussions of acting
exactly.
on them, too.
It's exactly what would happen if anybody got that kind of power, and then... Yeah. Be like, I'm gonna fuck everything with a hole.
I mean, when you put it like that, I feel kind of like my morality's shot morning all the time. Mm. Yeah,
like we're the gods. We have the flame of wisdom, but we're not going to give it to human beings until some asshole comes and steals it from us and gives it to the humans, and then we're going to torture him for all eternity.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of stories about gods and assholes.
Mm-hmm.
Into each other.
Yes, right. Moving on, let's combine these next two questions. What did you like the most and least about Godbound the system? For me, I really liked how I could just pretty much make up a word and be the justification for whatever the god is doing or the demigod is doing. And what I liked the least is, you know, is this an OSR thing versus like a Forge in the Dark thing of or Powered by the Apocalypse thing or whatever. Of it's pretty much you hit or you don't, and there's nothing in between. And I'm just not a big fan about that.
I'm not saying this to be argumentative, which is always a bad start to a statement, but
not to be a dick, but
I'm gonna be a dick now.
I always feel like in Powered by the Apocalypse or like Forged in the Dark games, there's the spectrum of you don't hit and everything gets worse.
Yes,
you do hit and most things get worse. And then you hit, and it's a good hit.
Yep.
And so I don't feel I like more that there's a it's a pass fail, and then they're not constantly getting reamed by any.
I think from a GM perspective, for me, running those, the middle part is also really hard to think of sometimes.
Can be, yeah.
What is it that is successful? What is it that is kind of a drawback?
Yep.
So I kind of feel
crazy. I never view it as being successful with a drawback, because it never feels like successful with a drawback. Mm. It feels like failure with a little good thing.
Oh, I see it the other way.
Maybe
I'm a half glass full kind of person.
Maybe because I just am too hard.
The consequences are always worse than the consequences are always worse than the positive outcome.
And maybe
it's like, oh yeah, you hit them for 3 points of damage and the roof falls in.
And then they stole your kidney.
Like, oh, great.
Oh, not 3 points.
Right.
You ticked off 1 point in their clock.
And maybe that's a, and then maybe
to Josh, that's when
he says, I'm too hard.
I think it might be too hard.
Is Josh, you should probably like, especially I think me and John, and my brother and I have talked about this because, you know, we're in the same house and talk about game stuff all the time. And we've talked about how like sometimes things don't narratively make sense to us. Like in the fiction, it's like, well, it's the drawback to the situation. And then something happens, you know, 200 feet away or like a city block away.
Sure.
It makes sense to us in that moment.
Yep.
So I think maybe that's another, maybe with, if Chris, maybe if you played, I don't know, with me, who is a very soft GM. I mean, you do play with me as a soft GM, but I don't play a system like, I play a system in Ryutama where it is like pass fail. So
if I were to say like my problem with it is I kind of align with Dave. It wouldn't be such an issue if it was the first time you get the success but fail. Oh, because especially in terms of combat, when it comes to like we're fighting somebody in hand to hand, it'd be like, okay, you made the successful hit, but now your footing's off balance or something like that. And you take a little penalty from the next
minus
time. But the more you get those, and I would be more acceptable to it if it was just like, it kept piling on where it's like, okay, now you're making too much noise. Things are happening around you. Okay. You're taking too long now. And it's like, but if you get like, you know what I mean? Like, I'd rather it be like a slow buildup of shit going on instead of being like, I succeeded, but now for whatever reason, my knee's dislocated and things are going bad. It's like
I mean, but even outside of combat, like, oh, there's a wall, oh, I'm gonna climb over that wall. It's like, no, I'm not gonna risk that. Like, I it's not worth the risk to try an interesting thing or a cool thing, because like, unless I get really, really lucky on my roll, especially early on, like, it's gonna brew up some shit that I don't need. So I guess I'll just walk around and take the long way rather than risk a roll to do a thing.
One thing,
especially if it's not combat, you know what I mean?
One thing I know I've complained about before, but since we're asking, is I just never felt like the characters in Powered by the Apocalypse were ever super competent at what they were, or even moderately competent at what they were doing. And in Godbound, similarly, I never really felt like we were really gods. Like we were really, you know, lording, you know, like there was a gap between us and humanity and we were much higher than them. And especially because I think it's because you have to have encounters and you have to have the challenges. And so you end up interacting with other beings that are just as powerful as you, which means you're all basically first level characters running around, you know, fighting goblins again, because you're all on par. So it just never felt like, oh, we're super powerful. And I don't know whether that was, you know, maybe if we spent more time working with our cults or we did, you know, whatever the case may be, it just never felt to me like we were truly above the fray, so to speak.
Yeah, I think I agree with that with John, because it's one of those, and again, thinking back on this campaign, even with me in the first session taking away Shalasar's mind, that felt right. Like that's something Milana can do. And it felt very powerful. But then when we immediately encountered the spaghetti man, it was like, oh, JK, no, you're really not. So maybe it was one of those things where like scaling it up, we got to be, I mean, I've been watching a lot of Deep Space Nine right now. And I'm in season four. And
great series.
It's so good. I love it so much. And the way that they pace the show, the tone and everything, and like season four I'm in is really dark right now. But in season one and two, it felt very like, you know, just cheesy premise, palling around, feeling pretty good that we're Starfleet, you know, we're taking care of
helping out the Bajorans.
Yeah, helping out the Bajorans and the Cardassian stuff. And then they dropped in season three. Oh shit, in the Gamma Quadrant, there's this whole thing called the Dominion, right? Mm-hmm. And then it's like, oh, you get kind of put into your place. Like the Cardassian Bajoran issue is kind of now kind of minor. So I think for Josh, I think a good takeaway for this is knowing if we come back to these characters in the next season for godlike stuff, is that you kind of do that. Make us feel like good about our characters and powerful with these like kind of chump things.
Yeah.
And then smack us in the face after like session 10 with like, there's actually a bigger, I mean, it's just narrative stuff. Yeah. And maybe narratively we could have, I don't know, that structure could have probably helped us out more. My thing about Godbound is that as a spellcaster, I felt completely useless.
Yeah, like, I can see that.
Magic stuff, I didn't really cast any spells. I mean, it's basically all of my words became what I did, you know, like all my gifts and stuff were just became my spell book. And I didn't really ever engage with the magic system.
Yeah, the magic system in Godbound definitely, when I had read it, I forget how long ago, it seemed not as good compared to just taking other words and using their powers.
There was, to me, it didn't make sense for Milana. And I was just like, no, I'm just going to put it towards gifts and stuff because they're basically what her powers or her spells that she was using anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my only thing about God. I like the words though. I really, really like, I really enjoyed making Milana, and I enjoyed making our one-shot characters, the one that we tested with, but like in the Patreon game.
Yeah.
And I would love to keep making, I think in this regards with like, I feel a little bit like Chris does with making characters. Like I would love to make more characters in Godbound because that's really fun and it's really interesting. And it's fun to find broken stuff too, that ends up making your character ridiculous, like John and his like completely ordinary man character, which was hilarious. I think that's fun, but the magic system I didn't like.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah,
yeah. I to build off of Amber, I think that one of my favorite things about Godbound as a system is just the flexibility to be able to be like, I'm gonna make this person however I want them to be, and it isn't like I was pushed into a playbook or a class or anything that kind of limited my pick and choose. I love the idea that it's like, oh, I want to do this thing and this other weird thing that aren't really related, and boom, here I made this cool thing. I really thought that was that's a real strong suit to that game. Kind of like way back in the proto days when we had our Mutants and Masterminds campaign, it was very similar, that like you can just like pluck powers and be like, yo, this is who I am now, without really worrying about, oh, does this fit, or is this, you know, is this a power that's outside of my class or anything like that. It's just kind of a point system.
Yeah, this is gonna sound bad, I really liked Godbound, and I want to rip out the whole cult stuff and all of that stuff and keep it. But I kind of miss having like a true point buy game with, you know what I mean? And I know that that's like dirty and gritty and you're going to get pencil marks on your hand, but like, I like it. I like it. And I feel like it would fit well for basically like a superhero system for our characters. Cause they've been superhuman for like 4 years now.
Yeah.
At least. I don't know. Yep. I feel like it would fit well.
Yeah.
And then we could just flavor it as we're getting our power from our cult and then
continue all that kind of stuff.
Culting the shit out of things.
Yep. Anything else?
No, I'm just sitting here trying not to chortle over point buy systems and superhero gaming. And I'm like, ooh, come into my lair.
Welcome, everybody.
I do think that is one way in which, Dad, you have infected me. I will never buy into Fate like you do, but I do like the superhero stuff.
Fate is awesome.
I can't get into Fate either. That's another conversation.
Yep.
Conceptually, I really like Godbound. I like the idea behind it, and I think basically I'm interested in running one eventually someday. I still have to look over the rules and stuff and like peer over them and whatever, but I really like the idea of being powerful enough to like deal with insignificant things, like without even having to do rules, but also making the insignificant things intriguing enough for the players wanting to engage with them.
Mm-hmm.
And like ultimately shift things in the world and working together to like make the world the way they want to, or just things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And basically having players more molding things, and then me as a GM having to calculate that and put that into making it into an interesting scenario. So I really like Godbound in general. Like, I just like the concept of it and all. But other than that, that's pretty much all I got to say. I don't think there's too much that I don't like about it yet. But I kind of got to work on getting myself ready to being able to run a game one day for that or something.
Cool. Next question is, what do you hope carries over from season 2 to season 4 of Tales from Moxbury?
Matthias Cromwell.
Yeah, this is because season 4 is supposed to be back in Moxbury proper. Yep. Okay. Jem Tella, obviously, and Matthias Cromwell. That'd be great. Yeah, I agree.
TC, nobody there.
He's like Baby Yoda.
Uh huh.
Yeah. I don't want this. Gonna sound. I don't know if that's gonna sound weird, but I don't want there to be a massive time skip.
No, there isn't. I said even back when we were playing, it'd only be like a couple weeks, like two, 3 weeks.
Yeah. That'd be good because entropy is a harsh mistress.
Well, and do you think we'll be playing Godbound again?
For reals.
I don't know. That'll be a conversation we'll have when we get closer to that time.
I will say right now, I would be interested in taking some sort of superhero system and hacking it.
Or one of our patrons, the one that I ran the Godbound game for, he has a very interesting system. I haven't read it still that may be applicable as well. So I think it sounds like we'll probably be evaluating different systems of playing instead of Godbound. And, but you know,
what was the,
I do not remember.
Well, like second edition Mutants and Masterminds had a whole book devoted to running fantasy games using Mutants and Masterminds.
I feel like
those are out there too.
Also, I don't know if a superhero game would help with the spellcasting problem, Amber.
What I would do is, I think if there was a way to, I would work with Josh probably and whatever system we choose to make it so that the spells that I care about the most from way back when we played 3.5, that was with Milana, we could somehow just build it in as powers on top of other superpowers. Mm-hmm.
Chilling.
Oh, and that could just be your powers. Yeah.
Because honestly, like, I love spell casting and I can flavor it as like spell casting, what I do, but like the tedious upkeep from 3.5 when I had my spell book, which I was cleaning out my bookcases a couple weeks ago, it was ridiculous. Like, I had a whole binder for my spells. I mean, now you can get spell cards and stuff, but it was a lot. And I actually liked Godbound for that reason, because I didn't have to worry about a spell book. I just was sad that the magic system wasn't as engaging as I was hoping it would be. And then I barely engaged with it. So my takeaway from Godbound is, I would be okay with this, like, absorbing power as spells, and they come out and I can just flavor them like she's casting. So
right, especially
like Scarlet Witch and Agatha or whatever kind of situation, you know.
Yeah, especially since you all jump through that portal and it was heavily implied that it goes to different dimensions. There can be a lot of stuff that causes changes that once you get plunked back into Moxbury, it also can help fictionally justify why things are slightly different or whatever as well. Anyone else have anything?
Dave? No, I like Moxbury as a setting. Obviously that isn't going to change drastically, but like I feel like we've spent so much time building that world that like I'm in no way ready to like walk away from that.
No, yeah, nope. Just the every other because it's
even if it is a world with no restaurants.
It has restaurants. It has the French version of Hungry Boy. What, I don't remember.
There's Hungry Boy. We were gone 2 weeks, and now the great restaurant uprising has occurred. Oh, yeah. No.
Ooh. A flourishing of cuisine art.
Peddling food becomes outlawed.
Right.
Grocery stores become outlawed.
Everybody must be a subsistence farmer.
You must, instead of having a grocery store, you must go to a restaurant for all your meals.
I don't mind that at all, to be quite honest. I never had to buy a single grocery ever again. That would be ideal.
Like the reverse pandemic.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
Could you imagine that kind of thing, though, where like all food is banned and the only places that are allowed to distribute food are restaurants and you have to buy cooked food? That'd be something. That'd be
weird. Would be okay with this.
Yeah.
It's like, but it's like, it's not just like that. It's like a glass of milk. Nope.
I would never want a glass of milk, but yeah.
I mean, like, imagining like this horrible dystopia where restaurants are like, if you have food, it's illegal, it's contraband for people who don't own restaurants. You can't
keep leftovers.
Yeah, can't keep leftovers.
As soon right. as you eat a meal, you have to push a button in your meal eating area and it incinerates.
Do you have a snacking license?
Yeah.
Are you allowed to have those bag of Funyuns on the street? You know, like stuff like that. That'd be insane. That'd be interesting to explore, interesting. But insane too. Like, whoa, what?
What an interesting, write that down, Josh.
No, I don't think I have the space and time to do something like that. I'll leave it to someone else. Did you have anything, Brother John, for taking from season 2 to season 4?
Spaghetti men. They're still there.
They're still there.
You know what I mean? No!
They're still strong.
Still strong.
And I still have a lot of, what do I have, effort dominion put into them? I'm the one with the most effort or dominion.
I think so, yes. Mechanical question, not even about the game, but I know how I run this game, and especially with the stream stuff. What were your thoughts on audience support with tithings?
I liked having it as a resource to use. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
I did not like that Josh got tithings also, because that was like the field, the field is already slanted. You're the DM. You can do whatever you want. Yeah. And then we're just going to add another layer of, oh, you guys sort of succeeded, but I'm going to screw you.
You know what? I'm in agreement with that. I mean, I don't mean to make you sound like an item, Josh, but this is like giving the PC more power over the player.
Yeah, it's
like for your favorite video game. It's like if Mario Brothers could just like suddenly like make a wall taller for no reason.
Right.
I think it'd be fun. The only way I would like for Josh to have tithings if it was cost more to give the GM a tithing. And then it wasn't a, like, he gets to re-roll. It's, you have to creatively come up with the situation, like, add a complication.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. And it's exactly when you're saying, everyone said, was saying of like, oh, I don't like Josh having it. I 100% agree with you, Amber. Yeah, it sounds like for next season 3 is going to cost people more to support me. And yeah, absolutely. I think that's the way to go of like, here's a new complication kind of deal.
You don't get a roll against us, you don't get a re-roll, but you get to,
well, and I think taking a step back to a criticism of Godbound, like I really didn't like the ability for NPCs to have effort and just nope away our abilities.
Yeah, that felt bad for me as well.
There's a system in,
because it was like, oh well, here's our 6 cool things we can do. They can nope away 5 of them. So like, well, whoever goes last gets to actually do their thing.
Right.
The rest of us are just burning off that effort.
Yep.
In the Star Trek Adventures game from Modiphius, they have a mechanic where you have red chips and blue chips, and I can't remember exactly what they're called, but basically the GM is building up power through the set of red chips that eventually you can screw with everybody, and then all the players are getting the blue chips that they can alter things on, and it's, so it's like a competitive situation there where, you know, you, the GM can do certain things with his chips, the players can do certain things with their chips, and you know, the two are different. And I think it's you know, that sort of idea.
So besides me having tithings, it sounded like y'all liked, though, having the support and tithings as well.
It's nice to get audience feedback. I think it makes it more fun. And for me,
So just to be clear, is it anonymous who you get the tithings from?
No. Or so in my system, my program, it's anonymous. I get to see like it just, but I could go through the chat because it's Twitch. So they tithe through chat. And so I could go back through the logs and see who.
So if you wanted to tithe yourself,
and you could set up a new user account that I didn't know, and
just asking,
not John 420.
Yeah, not just John
puppet accounts.
Oh my god, that seems pretty silly.
Yeah,
I would not spend
to
money.
You, but I don't. It won't be so silly once I have 50 tithing.
Right, exactly,
Brother John. If you want to make this game pay to win, you may do so.
So you just assume that every two weeks you're going to fork out $10 to play the game. No, I don't know why they like Gerlach. It's weird.
Wow, Brimstone 420, Jesus saves, tithes more to brimstone. That's so weird.
So weird. Gerlach for the win. Just keeps tithing for Gerlach.
We just slide a 20 in Josh's mailbox every month, and then suddenly our magical items get so much better. How does this work?
That's a thing that I miss.
What?
Items.
Yes, me too.
I really miss having items. Like, oh.
Yeah.
We had items, we just drank them.
Yeah, we just...
Well, I mean, I kind of figured out early in the Godbound that, you know, there's no benefit except to suck the juice out of them.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that became my... I told the guys on the drive up one time, shortly after we started, they could vouch for this, that I'm just going to grab every artifact I can and suck the juice out of it. That's my goal.
Get your dagger-shaped curly straw.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Every item is a Capri Sun.
If that's the only way to move the game forward in a positive way for us, then I'm just going to, I'm just going to open them all like they're a can of root beer.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right there. So there is the artifact system, which you all had artifacts, but you have to like spend on your artifact to make it better or make new ones instead of like getting new words or what have you. I agree. I really miss giving away magic items as well. It's super fun to everyone be like, oh, and to like use them and stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah. I like my shiny things.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like every time you presented a shiny thing to us, we just viewed it as a pinata you had to whack over.
And no, Milana was like, but, and then you're always all like have your straws out. And I'm like, take the juice. Like, oh, okay, fine. I'll drink this juice.
Yep.
Well, as far as items go, I mean, if you want items, you just have to make your own, essentially. Like, made his own ring and stuff like that, and like some other.
I like finding things. Like, if
you're a god, just make your things. Jeez.
No, because things created for me are not knowledge. Artifacts contain knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway,
that's it.
They also contain juice.
They do. So,
they contain god juice. Because somebody else put it in there to make that artifact, and you just need to suck it right back out.
Mm-hmm.
Try our new Dominion flavored Capri Sun.
Tastes like old man.
Tastes like Dominion.
If we were popular at all, if anybody listened to anything that we did, the amount of things I would create as like enamel pins would be a Dominion Capri Sun.
Oh, that'd be so good.
It'd be a capricious sun.
Boom!
Like, I would make like, you know, that specifically targeted at Amber because it was recent, like that crave that mineral meme.
Yeah.
It'd be like a picture, but with Gerlach as this crave that Dominion.
And he's like
just clinging to a wall and licking an artifact that's like embedded in the wall. Yeah, like,
oh, this crown is tasty
with his nasty forked tongue.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yep.
Crave that Dominion. That's so good. I love it.
Well. With that, the last question is, what is the plan for season 3 of Tales from Oxery? And the plan is we will be playing Beam Saber by Austin Ramsay. But before that, we're actually going to be playing 3 world building games. The first one is Microscope. I don't remember who it's by, sorry. Second one is The Ground Itself. And the last one is The Quiet Year. Because we're going to be playing a brand new everything. All right. We're going to brand new world of everything. And because I personally was just like, I don't know how to put mechs into Mox Fairy. And
you
I don't...
do a parallel universe.
Obviously. Yeah, exactly.
Have
so
you ever
we
watched
can...
a science fiction TV show.
Exactly. So we can establish that together.
This is Moxopolis.
Yeah Moxopolis.
Marvel Comics is going right now with a whole thing.
We're all in a snow globe on a rich child's mantle.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Even if we agree to it, it's a parallel universe, there's a lot of world building and, you know, that has to be done. And it's, I don't have as much time as I used to 11, 12 years ago. And so I want to play those 3 games with y'all to establish, you know, some of the fiction and the, you know, the big players and all that kind of stuff to then leverage into Beam Saber, where Beam Saber is a mech game. You can think of like Gundam Wing, Gundam, Macross, all those kinds of.
It's a super mech game.
Yeah.
I just want to be very clear that it is, that Brandon keeps telling me you're not playing a true mech like Gundam.
Wait,
stuff. It's super, super mech. If there's okay, any robots that, transform or do anything special or out of the normal that is not military,
yes, like,
it's super mech. So Beam Saber is
it's only super mech. It's only super mech because of the transform person then?
No, there's other stuff in this in Beam Saber that makes it more magical.
Okay.
You tell Brandon that he's a
nerd. He is. It is very, he's very meticulous about letting me know when a mech is a mech and when a mech is a super mech.
So here's how I described it. Like, because when me and Brandon were talking about it, Gurren Lagann is super mech because the idea of it is everything's too fast. The reason why Evangelion falls into the mech category is everything has a sense of reality to it.
Mm.
Like the things have weight to it. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't make sense for things to just like do weird, a jump 2 million feet into the sky and then okay. do a super hot kick basically.
So that's why there's a distinction.
Wait, actually that happens in Evangelion, doesn't it, where they're doing
we'll have to talk about this offline.
But Evangelion isn't like robots Saber. They are basically
it's gonna
humans
depend on how
with,
we run it.
No, yeah.
Here's what I said. I said, if you see how the robot is being maintained, that's mech. If you don't see how the robot is being maintained, that's super mech.
Yeah, you'll see how the mech's being maintained during downtime.
Which one?
Of Beam Saber during Beam downtime, Saber? You will see how they're. We'll talk about
not my maybe, character.
Yeah, okay. I know, not your character, but other characters.
That's why it puts it into the realm of.
Yes, but yeah, we're going to be playing that. It is a Forge into the Dark game, so as you've heard some feedback already, I'm going to be trying to do not be as hardcore at least at the beginning. So hopefully, everyone will have a better time. But with that, I wanted to say thank you all for playing with me. Thank you for watching and listening. You can find a whole bunch of other great shows and podcasts at geekspectre.com. And we'll see you all on the internet someday. Bye.
Thanks for listening to Tales from Moxferry. If you dig what you heard, leave a review, and more importantly, tell your friends. That is the best way to help us out. If you'd like to help out even more, become a patron at patreon.com/geekspective. If you'd like to see how it's all made, join Josh every Sunday at 8:30 p.m. EST on the Geekspective Twitch channel for GM Prep. You can catch a live stream of Tales from Moxray every other Saturday on the Geekspective Twitch channel at 6 p.m. EST. I want to thank Rudy Basso for editing the podcast and for making the opening recap. If you need someone to edit your podcast, you can find him on Twitter at Rudy Basso. I also want to thank Rob Anderson for making the kick-ass theme music. If you want him to make you some music, you can find him on Twitter at PotentiallyRob. Thanks for listening. Catch you in 2 weeks or less.